you looking at, nerd? Huh?
I thought I was looking at my mother's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio.
No guts, Hudson.
Yeah. You know, only when it came right down to it, I just wasn't attracted to her.
Should never stop you.
She seemed too big.
It could have worked out.
I figured I would have gotten into trouble somehow.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta say, what the fuck? Make your move.
That's easy for you to say. I mean, you're all set. You're probably going to Harvard. Me, I don't want to make a mistake, jeopardize my future.
Joel, you want to know something?
What?
Every now and then, say what the fuck. What the fuck gives you freedom? Freedom brings opportunity. Opportunity makes your future.
It's such a little liar. No, I've whipped up this nasty little soiree over at his friend Wyatt's house.
Soiree what?
Soiree, honey. I think that means, party. Party. You know, there's gonna be sex, drugs, rock and roll, chips, dips, chains, whips. You know, your basic high school orgy type of thing. I mean, I'm not talking candle wax on the nipples or witchcraft or anything like that. No. Just a couple of hundred kids running around in their underwear, acting like complete animals.
Hello, welcome to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and now, here he is, the three things I admire most. He's a father, he's a son, and he's the co-host with the most. Teal. How's it going, buddy?
I am a father and a son, it's true.
It's true, yeah. You're also the co-host with the most.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I mean, where else am I going to get those kinds of accolades? Except, you know, on my own show.
There you go, Percy. That's right. We're tooting our own horns. Okay, so listen, a couple of things before we get into things.
Yes. Oh, we got some business to take care of?
We have business to take care of. You know, there's some shout-outs and some plugs and plaudits.
Okay.
Okay, so first is a little shout-out and plug. There is a listener from Maine. And she is a professor and a poet, and she has just published her first novel. It's a young adult genre piece called As Many Nows as I Can Get.
Yes.
And it is Shayna Youngdahl. So, you know, fan of ours, listener of the program, and congratulations to her on that first novel.
Yeah. Check it out on Amazon.
Check it on Amazon or your local bookstore. And again, if you like the young adult genre, or you got a kid at home that just is craving those dystopian young adult novels, this isn't it.
This
isn't
just a regular young adult. This is a teen love story.
Yes,
with so lots it's not of dystopian. Drama.
Lots of drama, not dystopian. So
yes,
we'll clear that up. But congratulations to her. Get your copy on shelves now. Anyway, so that's one little shout out. And second, we have a newish listener to the program.
Ooh.
And he came to us via our Under the Silver Lake episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he found a link on Reddit. It's kind of funny is that, you know, a lot of people on Reddit were talking about this movie, Under the Silver Lake, and I thought, well, geesh, you know, everyone's always got this same type of question, like,
right.
What's real, what's not, well, all these things. Who do you think the owls kisses, and all this crazy stuff. So I thought, well, you know, we did a whole episode on it. Let's just put the link out there, and that way people can hear our theory, and I don't have to retype it 1,000 times, like, here's our theory,
right,
you know,
because
that would get boring. So, you know, I did, every time someone has a question, I was putting that up there, and then I got called out on it. Like, somebody actually wrote and said, oh, you know, I was going to listen to your episode, but then I see that your link is like in every thread and you're a troll. And I'm like,
oh, man.
I felt bad because I'm like, I'm not a troll now. But thankfully we got on our feedback at jimandteal.com. We got a lovely email from a guy named John Ford,
who doesn't think you're a troll. He's not.
He doesn't think we're a troll.
Yeah. And he's not the John Ford who directed The Searchers.
No, he's not the ghost of John Ford, the great classic director, but he's somebody, and he enjoyed our program, and he started listening to some of the other episodes, and he's really liked it, and he listened to our episode on great film endings, and he wanted to contribute one of his own, and yeah, so he said that he really, really loves the end of Whiplash, and I wrote back that I agree. I love the end of Whiplash, and I think that really ties the film together. It's very exciting, and the performances, it's like it just all falls into place. So, you know, I thank you for that, John. And then he actually further said that, you know, hey, if we're still looking for people to write some things for our website, stuffweseen.com, that he would love to maybe contribute. And I'm all for that.
Yeah.
If you want to send something in, you know, obviously, like, make it good.
Yeah, well, that's that's sort of an invitation to anyone who's listening. Check out the website. And if you feel like you want to write something for it, let us know.
Yeah, we're all for that. But again, you know, let's take some words of caution here. The IMDb user reviews, if you don't want to find yourself on that side of the coin, you know, really put some thought into what you're writing and, you know, have it come from the heart and have a point of view.
And we may do some editing.
We may. Or if we just don't have any time and we just like, hey, there's content for the website, we'll just put it up.
Just, yes.
Yes, we have our own website, which is awesome.
We do,
and we thought.
And also another thing to point out about our website: no ads.
You know, so if there's advertisers that really want
we
to
could use
jump
a couple
in,
advertisers.
Yeah, we'll figure out how to put that out there.
I was thinking we could have places ads for places like the Mahoning Drive-In.
Ooh,
other
yeah, so
or local
that's a great
theaters.
Topic to. That's a great way to get out of our introductions and into some of the content is that, as you know, if you've listened to this show before, that you may have heard us talk about the drive-in experience.
Yeah, it was a big part of your childhood.
I know, not so much yours, but definitely mine. I could go on ad nauseum about the drive-in experience, but I was going through Amazon Prime a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, they always have some interesting documentaries. And that's one of my favorite things about these streaming services.
Yeah.
Is you don't have to, like, wait for the one or two documentaries that used to come out in theaters a year.
Right.
You can see a whole bunch of interesting documentaries on these streaming services. And one caught my eye. And it was called At the Drive-In.
Of course it caught your eye.
And that, of course, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, At the Drive-In, what's this about? And it basically was, it was focused on a drive-in that a few years ago, the theater industry, or I guess the Hollywood industry, the studios, you know, they basically decided that enough of making any 35mm film prints.
Yeah, going totally digital.
Yeah, we want you to go digital. We've given you enough leeway. So now if you want to see movies at your theater or drive-in, you better convert to a digital format because that's all we're going to send you. No more 35mm prints of new movies.
Yeah, so you got to spend $50,000 to $100,000 to upgrade your projection equipment. And that was rough for a lot of small theaters.
Yeah, because at this point, you know, the drive-ins have not died off completely, but they probably have in certain areas and states.
Well, I think in this movie they said that at its height there were around 3,000 drive-ins.
That's right. There was a time there was more drive-in screens than theatrical screens.
Yes, exactly.
At one point.
And that now there's about 300.
Yeah, and that was of a four. That was 4 years ago, by the way. So
there may be fewer now. Yeah, but that gives you some rough numbers of what has happened to the drive-in over the last 50 years?
You know, there's still some in the East Coast, and where I live now, there's a drive-in, I would say, about an hour and 10 minutes away. The problem is these movies, like, there's double features, and if they get out at 1 or 2 in the morning, and then you have to drive back an hour home. I mean, I'm no spring chicken now, so it's just, you know, it's a little tricky, but this... What was happening with this particular theater and the Mahoning Drive-In in...
Mahoning, Pennsylvania?
No. Oh. It's in Lehighton, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's called the Mahoning Drive-In. And it was an original Ozoner, I think, from the late 50s, early 60s. Had been running, you know, continuously. And the guy had been running it. I think that business had been very slow.
Yes.
And it was dying off.
And he was playing first run stuff.
Yeah, but it was still, he wasn't getting, you know, you get the wrong pairing of first run stuff.
Yeah. And,
you know, he didn't have enough money to upgrade to projection.
Well, that was really the thing. Either close down or upgrade to digital. Because
that's just scary.
Because he's using the original projectors from the drive-in from 1948.
Yeah, and so, you know, those projectors, by the way, they'll last for a really long time.
Yeah.
And he was always, like, in the documentary, they show him with all the parts and stuff that he, like, you know, does to recondition and restore those.
Yeah, this guy is a real professional when it comes to servicing and maintaining and operating those machines. At one point in the movie, he mentions that you used to have a license to run them because they were considered heavy machinery.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
And I think he probably had to be part of the projectors union.
Yes.
There was a projectionist union, and I don't know if that still exists because there's hardly any real projectionists anymore.
Well, he makes that point that there are no projectionists anymore because everything's just on a timer and computerized, and it just plays the movie at the same time and it attaches the trailers, and it all just does it automatically.
Yeah, and here's the great thing. So it was really poised to close, and this is the documentary that you know, unfolds. But, you know, there's a couple of fans out there. A couple of guys were really into going there and really loved the drive-in. And, you know, they basically kind of came, not to the rescue of this guy, but they like kind of all as a group effort joined in and said, well, what if we were able to keep this drive-in going as a 35-millimeter only drive-in and we find a way to just – show, you know, retro movies, movies that are, you know, a retro theater. And that's what's interesting is that, you know, not only did the studios not want to give out new movies, but they are notoriously stingy about wanting to release any of their back vault.
Right. And
partly because a lot of things have happened. Shipping costs cost a lot of money now to ship these movies.
Yeah. And they get damaged.
And they probably also don't have probably the archivists that they have at these studios anymore. So that means it's another, you know, it's more work that they don't want to do to have somebody like manage that stuff. And so, you know, there's probably 1,000 different headaches there. But they one of the guys in this movie, he takes on the role of being the booking manager. And by the end of the movie, you know, they've kind of started this new road.
Yeah.
And they're starting to, you know, they start to make the thing popular. Now, I, of course, after watching this movie, went on to check out the Mahoning Drive-In and discovered that in the past few years, they have developed a kind of cult-like following. And people are flocking from everywhere to go to this drive-in. And they have what I love, their niche. And I think that what they've done is they've found various film bookers, you know, like people that will distribute certain types of movies. And it's kind of gone back to the roots of what made drive-ins great. When drive-ins were second run, which is pretty much when I went, they didn't get the movie first run. The studios would never do that. You'd have to be in the regular theaters first, and then you'd get it second run. So they were always looking for content.
Right.
And what they could always get was the movies that played a year before. And then in the spring and then in the fall, kind of the, you know, the start and the end of the season, when they were looking for movies and they just, you know, when new summer movies started, they weren't getting those. So what are they going to show? Horror movies.
Yes.
horror movies and sort of sex teen comedies, right, and, you know, low rent fare. And that's what people went to the drive-ins for. Well,
yeah.
Because it's also a low rent experience.
Right.
You're not getting six-track Dolby.
You're getting crackly sound. You're going to miss some of the words. Sometimes before the sun goes down completely, the screen is kind of washed out. There's people walking around talking. It's not a focused movie-going experience. And so what you're saying
But it's fun.
Right, but that those B and C movies kind of provide their own kind of thrill. It's, you know, there's always, every 10 minutes in a horror movie, somebody's going to get killed, right?
Yeah, right. And it's, again, you know, they're not plot heavy.
You
don't have to follow along. You don't have to care about it. It's not about cinematography and stuff. And, you know, you develop a love for horror movies. And I'm not saying that this theater is just showing, this drive-in showing horror movies now, but they've been able to specialize. What they did is that they've got great programming and they've created themes and people are coming in costumes and they're turning it into events. And sometimes they're doing multiple day events. And one thing that they've solved, and I think this is genius because I never heard any other drive-in ever think of this. Since they know people, A, are coming from long ways and that it's really late to drive home really late at night, that could be dangerous. And what if someone's drinking and all of those things, they will allow you to set up a camp in the back. You can get a camp pass.
Exactly.
And what that does is after the movie's over, you leave your car where it is and you go back to your little campsite and you can stay overnight and then you just have to leave by like noon the next day.
Yeah. And you can get a multiple night pass and spend the whole weekend there. And I think
they do these weekend themes.
Yes.
I think that is so genius because, like, say someone like me, I would have to go many hours to go.
Right. It's I checked for me, it's a 8 hours and 40 minute drive.
I think it's like a 7+ hour drive for me. And I want to go. My wife is dead. I mean, they've been already showing since I watched this documentary, every weekend has had some awesome, like, weekend of fun. And I would have shown up for any of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They have these sort of theme weekends. And it's like if they're doing zombie movies, people will come dressed up as zombies and they'll have all this stuff out. And
They did a killer prom weekend and people were dressed up in prom outfits.
Exactly. And it's more than just going to a drive-in. They've turned it into a whole huge experience with all these different elements. And one thing I think that is important to point out is that all the people who work there are volunteers. They just love this so much. And there's one guy in the movie who drives 6.5 hours to get there every weekend so that he can run the cash register without getting paid.
And I don't know if, you know, I mean, 6 years later, maybe he moved there.
Right.
Or no, it's like 4 years later, but I don't, you know, I mean, but that's the thing is it's providing a community. And obviously, they recognize that it's a small community. There's only so many people that really, really appreciate this kind of experience. I happen to be one of them. And yet they're coming together because they're getting something. It's, you know, it's community. It's the movie experience. And a lot of times, right, you know, various age people, these are things that maybe they loved on video or DVD, whatever, but they never got to see them on a screen.
Right.
And this isn't just a screen. It's a giant screen.
I think it's like the second largest screen on the East Coast or something that keeps saying in the movie. I don't know what it is, but it's a giant screen. It's a really big screen. And I don't know if you saw this. I was doing a little research over this past winter. The screen was damaged.
Yeah. And they had a fundraiser. Yes. I don't know if they finished, you know, getting, but, you know,
they
that's
did.
The
they,
hard thing.
They got the money they needed.
I can't tell you, many a drive-in closed. Not because they weren't doing well, not because, you know, they didn't own the land. Sometimes a lot of those drive-ins did own the land. And of course, in the late 80s and stuff, when business was dropping off, real estate was getting hot, and so they sold out. But a lot of times they were put out of business because of damage to the screen. It was too expensive to repair.
Right.
And so, you know, there's so many forces against the drive-in that I loved to see. This is a real, like, the documentary played to me like a real underdog story.
Oh, absolutely. It's an underdog story. And at one point, one of the guys in the movie says, you know, it's become a place for people who love horror films, zombie films, dinosaur movies, sci-fi movies. And it's sort of become a second home for a lot of people.
One of the things you just said is that of the kind of movies they're playing, when my wife was reading me off a list of all the movies they played over the summer,
yeah,
pretty much every weekend, if I'd had, you know, if I was living nearby and, you know, was maybe a little bit younger and could stay up, I would go every weekend because they had so many things that are like, yep, I would definitely go. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, they showed Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's just the kind of thing that I think is really cool, because if they're showing a film like that, they got a 35 millimeter print.
Exactly.
They can't show. Well, OK, that's one little thing that I also thought was very cool.
Yeah.
They realized that there are some things that they wanted to show, some like weird stuff on VHS or some like maybe like an independent little student movie.
Right. Or short film.
They use their ingenuity, and I don't know if they've upgraded this or not.
They probably upgraded it a little since the movie, but probably not much. I mean, this is a really sort of do-it-yourself, duct tape, everybody pitch in kind of place.
Well, it's so cool is they built a tiny little, like, almost like drive-in movie projection booth.
Yes.
Where they took and they matrixed and stacked a couple of, like, you know, pretty okay digital projectors that you might find in a classroom or something. And what they did is they realized that if you could get them all so they were all synced, the multiple projectors would add the brightness that they needed to show it on the big drive-in screen. And this just gave them some versatility to do some like special stuff.
And one thing, they had a VHS weekend where they just showed stuff on VHS.
I know. It's so great.
It's just fantastic.
This is a real film lover story.
It is a film lover story, and it's about people coming together in a really celebratory and positive way. To just enjoy this kind of, and they talk about this a lot in the movie, how the drive-in is sort of this escape, right? It's like going into this other world a little bit, and the rest of the world kind of melts away. And in fact, they have a wedding there at one point in the movie.
Well, I don't think I would get married at a drive-in, but I can tell you that it hit me. Is what they say in this documentary is how I felt as a child going to the drive-in. That when a horror movie came out, my parents, it's another weird thing, right? You know, my parents were very young parents. Like, they got married when they're very young. They had me when they're very young. So, you know, when you have kids, when you're young yourself and you want to see films, your kids get in the way because it's too expensive if you get
a babysitter but they were still, every time.
You know, so that's how I kind of got to see some things that I probably shouldn't have because they wanted to go to the movies. And, you know, the drive-ins then were super cheap. So there was this one drive-in. It's called the Chelmsford Twin Drive-In. And that's the one we went to the most. It cost, when we started going there, like maybe $3 for the carload. So imagine four of us going to the drive-ins for a total of $3 and seeing two movies. We could bring in, sometimes we'd bring like sandwiches and stuff in. And then we would go to the snack bar and like a hot dog was like, you know, $1. We get hot dogs and drinks and candy. And like in the intermission, you know, my dad would get like an ice cream. It was just, and then it was so cheap, right? And one of the things is my parents would be kind of embarrassed if they were to take my sister and I to see a rated R movie at night at the regular theater.
Right.
But when it's the drive-in, they had no, like you could stick, like nobody's judging you at the drive-in. You could
it's
take
really
these
true.
Young kids to see Friday the 13th part 1 and 2, which we all went to see in the mid 80s.
Well, there's actually a part in this movie and at the drive-in where a woman who works there says, I wish we didn't play so many horror movies. It's not really my thing. And then it cuts to a shot of like a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old in Friday the 13th masks holding bloody machetes and talking about how much they love Friday the 13th.
Oh, my kid, my oldest, he's dying to watch those movies. He'll be disappointed, I think.
He will be totally disappointed because they suck.
They do. But see, at the drive-in, it'd be perfect. And I saw so many of these things. I mean, I saw movies like Blood Beach
at
the drive-ins, The Boogans, Deadly Blessing.
Oh, wow. Those are some real classics. Yeah.
Psycho 2. Loved it. Yeah, these are all things at the drive-ins. And there was another one called the Billerica Pinehurst Drive-In. It was a single screen, which always bummed me out because now there's only just one choice.
Right.
And some weeks it just didn't work out. They tended to be maybe a little bit more low rent than the Chelmsford. Chelmsford got all the Disney things whenever they were packaged up. They got movies like, you know, as soon as they got to second run. The Pinehurst, they relied almost exclusively on horror.
Interesting.
So I saw a lot of horror stuff at that particular drive-in. Anyways, what's happening now, I think, like, you know, again, I don't know, it'll be past due, right, when this episode airs, but this weekend, they are doing, at the Mahoning Drive-In, is Teens Gone Wild.
Yes, Teens Gone Wild.
and basically, it's a sort of collection from around 83 to 4 of Teens Gone Wild movies, like Revenge of the Nerds, Up the Creek, Screwballs, Joysticks, and that ought to be a real fun weekend. And the thing is,
I mean, those are, we were talking a lot about horror movies, but there were also these cheap comedies that I think were a staple of the drive-in too.
All of those movies, a lot of those I saw on VHS tape, but they all played at the drive-in. And, you know, they're not my favorite films. They're not really good, but Revenge of the Nerds, I really did like as a kid, but they were films that as a teenager, like just 13 years old, not old enough to like go to rated R movies by myself, they are the movies I craved. Like when one of those was advertised, I was like, how can I get my dad to take me to this movie? what do I got to do to get him to want to take me to this? Because for some reason, I think, you know, you're at that age, you're just, you know, you're hitting puberty, and you know that these movies are going to offer you a look at the female anatomy.
Well, and specifically, these movies, part of the deal was they all had bare breast at some point in the movie. That was,
even if it made no sense for the bare breast to be shown.
Yes. I'm thinking of a scene in Up the Creek specifically.
Every scene that a bare breast showed, there was no real need for it.
No, but there's one that's so gratuitous, it's absolutely insane.
I know what you're talking about. So just as full disclosure, that was the one film out of that group of films that I did not see and never saw.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned, as we decided that we were going to talk about these things on this episode, you said, oh, I'm watching Up the Creek. And that was enough for me. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm going to take the plunge and see what this is all about. And so just this week, I watched Up the Creek, which my review is, it was better than High School USA.
Hey, that's saying something.
But it was really bad. By the way, do you know the name of the college there? Padalan, whatever it was.
Lobotomy U?
No, it wasn't called Lobotomy U. This is the funny little in-joke, or this is how they thought the movie was funny.
Uh-huh.
The name of the college in French means the fart master. So, you know, you have to be in to know.
So, and wow, that's really subtle for a movie like this.
Yeah, and I thought it'd be funny if when it was in France and it would be dubbed, and instead of like using the French word, they would say, I go to Fartmaster University. And then some French person would go, hey, do you know what Fartmaster means? What? Le Pantomime. And then they'd start laughing. That's the level of humor in the movie.
Yeah, I had not seen this movie since it came out in April of 1984 when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, talk to me about that. How do you get to see that? I almost think I know, but I want to know how you get to see it, because I bet you your mom didn't take you to see that.
No, I saw it by myself.
Okay, so how do you get in to see that movie?
The people at the theater kind of knew me.
Here's that weird kid who likes to see all the blood and gore and violence.
Well, I would see pretty much anything. So my parents would drop me off, say, at noon on a Saturday.
Right.
They
didn't care. They said, hey, this kid, he's good to go.
He's good to go. And they, you know, I'd have $20 or something, which was enough for a couple of, and I'd go to two or three movies, and they'd pick me up at like 6 o'clock for dinner. And so I could, and they, the theater did not mind me going to R-rated movies. I don't know why.
Your parents at dinner, they're like, so what did you do today? Well, I watched Fartmaster University, a lot of bare breasts. How was your day, Ma?
Yeah, well, I saw good movies too, but right. I definitely saw, there was something about these sort of crappy 80s comedies, and some of them are actually pretty good. Well, I don't know, I haven't seen them in so long, I can't really say. but, you know, like Weird Science.
Yeah, I mean, these are all movies like those. So those are like, they're sort of different tiers.
Yeah.
And that was the tier of like, well, okay, we got it. We're jumping around here a bit. So something happened, right? This is what I think is very fascinating.
Something happened right after Up the Creek.
Yeah. So something so a lot of these sex comedies, there's this period from like, well, I mean, it all started in the 70s, but there's this period from about like 1981 to 1984.
Yes.
And 82, I think it was 82. And like, I think it's in the winter of 82, a movie like called Porky's comes out.
Yes.
And it's a sensation. It's raunchy. It's kind of like taking Animal House to the extreme.
Makes tons of money. Huge hit.
Makes it, because the movie cost like maybe $100,000 and it made like millions. And the thing, and it was such a hit that before the year was out, they had already released a sequel.
Right.
Porky's 2 the next day.
Yes.
And, but they had like the formula where it's set in the 60s. So that was like a big thing because of Animal House, is the shenanigans are, here are these directors and writers, they all grew up in the 60s, and it's their chance to show the exploits that
right.
if you were in a 60s movie, you couldn't show, but
exactly.
now free reign of rated R. So that was like kind of like a big thing. Like, look at the good old days, but look at how naughty and horny we all were. and of course, when Porky's came out, right, I was, if it's 82, I wasn't even 12. And I wanted to see that movie so bad. And my parents saw it, and I couldn't see it. You know, they saw it, and they were, like, talking about how hilarious it was. And I had to have my mom describe, like, the stuff because I wanted to see it. And I couldn't see it. However, by the winter of, like, 83, 84, we got our first VCR.
Oh,
and
then
there was only so many videos available at the store. One of those was
Porky's. One of those
and
was
by the
Porky's.
Time it was videos, they said, yeah, you can watch it. I don't know why, but somehow because it was in our own home and they wouldn't be embarrassed taking us.
Right.
Free reign.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the most hilarious film of all. But, and we're going to jump around a little bit here because we've got to get back to that aspect of what I thought was funny. And
right.
I don't know.
And,
it's a little bit dicey.
Now it's not, sometimes it's not so funny anymore. I mean, Up the Creek.
No.
Up the Creek, I don't think was ever funny.
No. And it's not, I mean, other than the fact that they just, they like probably said, we have to have so many bare-breasted shots in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that the lead actress, Jennifer Runyon, who, you know, if you grew up in the 80s, you knew who she was.
Yes.
She must have had a contract that she did not have to take her top off.
She did not. And as a result, it's a really respectful performance. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, so after this, I had a big crush on her.
I love that.
As a 12-year-old, I had a big Jennifer Runyon crush, and she's got like the 80s feathered hair, and I just thought that was like the coolest thing ever, and that she was so beautiful, and that, you know, someday I would be a 12th year college student and be able to have a girlfriend.
Well, here's the funny thing about that, right? So Tim Matheson, he plays this guy who's been in college for 12 years.
Yeah.
And so, all right, do the math. If he was 18 when he go to college, that means he'd be 30.
Yeah.
Right? So already, that, I guess that explains why he's an adult, because there's not a single, like, teenager or anybody that's, like, 20 years old in this film.
Right.
But the funny part is he was 37 when they made Up the Creek. I mean, the guy looks really old.
Yeah, he's like this middle-aged guy doing a college movie. It's hilarious.
Oh, man.
I wonder if they changed his... I wonder if the script... I wonder if they actually...
Well, they got him, and they also got the guy who played Flounder in Animal House.
Yes.
So they were clearly like going on sort of star power there.
And this is just a movie about people going down a river on a raft, basically.
Yeah, well, it's one of those races where there's basically shenanigans afoot where everybody's trying to sabotage everybody.
Exactly.
Else.
So it probably
it's a sabotage movie.
It's the mad world.
Yeah, and also like, you know, the
Cannonball Run,
Magnificent Men and Their Flying Machines. That's just basic, and Rat Race, all of that stuff. But it's just those movies will make you laugh. This will not. But something interesting happened. It changed everything.
Yeah.
Shortly after Up the Creek. Because when I watched Up the Creek, I thought about this. I said, you know, except for the fact that there's this nudity in there, it's a very tame movie. And it really been a kind of film that if you just took those shots out,
right,
it would be PG-13. And ha-ha. Well, that's why I wanted to see when it was released. It was released in April of 84. PG-13 didn't exist. By the end of that summer, it did. And it was funny. It had nothing to do with the sex because basically your PG movies, you could get away almost with lots of violence. But if you wanted to have sex or show nudity, it went right to R.
Exactly.
And so PG kind of carried a large swath. But then in the summer of 84, you had Gremlins and you had Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes.
And people found their young kids were frightened by these movies. And they said, something's got to be done. These movies are getting too violent. And so PG-13 was born. And the first film that was actually released as a PG-13 movie was Red Dawn.
Oh, which I did see in the theater.
And I did too. And I remember I went by myself. It just opened. It was opening day. So it's the first PG-13 movie.
Right.
And I was 13. Actually, I was 14. But I didn't know if it was like rated R. Like, are they going to card you? And I'm like,
right.
I didn't know that, like, is PG-13 like you have to still have your parents if you're not 13? And it was very confusing, but it didn't matter. Like, it just was a recommendation. But I was like, I don't have an ID that says I'm 14 years old.
Right.
How am I going to get in there if they say no? But what happened is then that if you're an independent little producer making these smut movies, you're like, well, I can make this much money with a rated R movie, but if I can get those preteens to watch it at PG-13. So, you know, suddenly when Police Academy, the first one came out, that was rated R and my dad took me and we just thought it was hilarious. By the time the second one came out, that was PG-13.
Interesting.
And for me, I was like, PG-13? Oh, it's not going to be as good. And it wasn't. Because a lot of times they had to take some of that, like, kind of, you know, racy humor.
The raunchy humor they had toned down. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? There was somebody out there who always found a way to turn things in. He sort of evolved the genre of the teen movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he found a new way to be super offensive. And that is the late, great writer, director, producer, John Hughes.
Yeah, and that, wow, what a complicated can of worms that is. I think Molly Ringwald, did you read her piece?
Oh, I read it, yes. And it's funny because it's sort of something I kind of thought about, but I thought she did an amazing job of reevaluating a movie she was in, which was, you know, The Breakfast Club, and pointing out some things. You want to talk about that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'll give you a rest. How about that? No. you know, essentially, if you haven't read that article, she talks about the way she's treated in the movie by Judd Nelson's character. And that there's a scene where, like, he kind of reaches and kind of grabs in between her legs, I think.
Yes.
And of course, this is all played for humor and laughs and flirting, I guess.
Well, yeah, he's really kind of mean to her.
Yeah, no, obviously he likes her. But, you know, that kind of behavior, well, yes, it may be very true to the way teenagers might have acted.
Right.
You look at it now and say that people love this movie and it's been a part of their lives. It's sort of important. But you wonder if when you see this behavior, does that sort of enter your brain and kind of send messages to say, as if you're a guy, that, oh, well, that kind of behavior is not only okay and should be expected and tolerated by other women, because if you like them, that's kind of, you know. And so now, of course, there's been a lot, you know, grabbing women without their consent
is just not cool anymore.
It's not cool. I think somebody made that very uncool in 2016, but but probably even before that.
But I think there's a lot of things that we've sort of grown out of from a lot of these 80s movies.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we like these movies, but so what I think you're going to jump into is that there are things, if you watch them now, and I think sometimes if you haven't watched them in years and you forget, you're going to watch these films and suddenly you might be watching them with your kids and you're going to suddenly feel very uncomfortable by something that comes up that you can't believe this was commonplace and accepted in a Hollywood movie.
Exactly. I'll give you an example of a movie that I'm not going to watch with my kids for this reason, even though it's kind of like I saw it when I was a kid and I loved it, is Crocodile Dundee.
Okay, so I'm very curious about this because I've watched it, and I've actually watched it with my older son, and there's probably something in there that, you know, that I didn't even realize, like, was super inappropriate. But I'm curious as to what in it gets you that you really don't like.
Well, there's one scene in particular.
Okay, tell me about that.
It's transphobia.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's played for laughs.
It's played for laughs that there is a man dressed as a woman, and he actually grabs his crotch.
Yes.
Yeah. And that kind of thing just doesn't play anymore.
No. I mean, I always use them as teaching moments. If there's something like that, we pause and we talk about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't ban my kids from watching this, but it's definitely something that has to be talked about. But it was just accepted in the 80s that was, you know, it's funny to make fun of trans people.
Yeah.
That's not the only fact, and it's also funny to make fun of lack of consent.
Do you have another example of that?
Of lack of consent? I just had one in mind. Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah, that's like the key. So,
can't forget that.
Here's the thing. So my dad and I we see it opening day. My dad was on one of his staycations for the summer, and it came out, and the two of us go. And it wasn't very busy and stuff. And, you know, I wanted to see this because I identified
as a nerd,
right? And that's how I was very quiet and I just wasn't super popular. So I felt like this is a movie that's going to speak to me. And we watch it and we laughed so hard for the whole thing. Like, and then there's the panty raids,
yes,
which, you know, there's lots of gratuitous it's definitely very gratuitous against women.
Yes.
And also there's a gay character in it, which I guess on the one hand you applaud that they had a gay character.
Right, but
in the
then
movie,
they make fun of
also,
them.
Yes, they do. and of course and in one hand it is funny, but it's also not funny. There was a moment that really disturbed me in the movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Which is what you were talking
That's
about.
That's what I was
but
talking
it actually,
about.
This is what's interesting when I was a kid seeing this film. Sometimes you don't know how to explain something, but you get a gut.
Yeah.
And there's the scene during the big, sorority fraternity carnival that the gorgeous Betty Childs, I think, is the character's name. And this actress is also in Up the Creek, as one of the pals. And she goes into this sort of like fun house. Where there's like a bouncy house room, and she's dressed up like a cowgirl, and she's waiting for her boyfriend, who's like sort of like a Darth Vader guy.
Right.
You know, he's dressed like a Darth Vader character. So he has a mask. Well, he gets distracted or whatever, and he leaves his mask, and the head nerd goes in, and he puts the mask on.
Yes.
And then she like seduces him to have intercourse, and they do, and then it's like the best sex she's ever had, and then suddenly, you know, the mask comes off and she sees it's the nerd, and she's like, "You're that nerd," and then she falls for him,
right,
because he was so great. And
that wasn't
funny. And the time, and as a kid, I actually was thinking to myself, but wait a minute, if she didn't know who he was and she thought he was somebody else, even though she consented to having sex with him, she didn't know it was him.
It's
so that's got to be wrong.
It's wrong. And it's really, I mean, watching it now, it's disturbing.
So out of all of the scenes of that movie that are inappropriate, and, you know, there's those that will say, well, you know, everyone's being too politically correct. And I get that. And, you know, you can still enjoy it as long as you recognize some of this is offensive, and that it was offensive even back then, but people would still laugh at inappropriate stuff.
I mean, we should point out that movies like Porky's and Up the Creek, these were controversial at the time.
Porky's, there were people that thought this was vile and disgusting. Yeah. And this guy, they're peeping through the girls' locker room, but he sticks his penis through a hole that I don't know how they didn't notice there was a hole there. And of course, you know, he's making like he's pretending like it's talking and stuff. And then, of course, you know, it's played for laughs, but then somebody yanks on it and hurts him. Right. So that's, I guess, good. But the idea, I mean, this we would recognize as a form of sexual assault.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, but it's important to point out that it wasn't like the 80s anything goes kind of stuff. It was controversial at the time, although these John Hughes movies were not controversial at the time.
No, I mean, so, you know, on that vein of Revenge of the Nerds, the movie that came out, and I saw it as a sneak preview, and a lot of people might not realize this movie was not a box office hit when it came out. It lasted maybe only a couple weeks in theaters, but it found its championship on home video, which is 16 Candles.
Yes.
Everybody loves it now. I was one of the very few kids I knew that saw it when it was in the theaters. And I loved it so much that I wanted to see it more times in the theaters, but it didn't last more than like 2 weeks because, again, I identified with the geek, Michael Hall. And of course, it was the ultimate, it was very much a male fantasy film.
Oh, absolutely.
And for a teenage guy like me.
Yeah, okay. We'll get into male fantasy in a minute. Yeah, keep going.
Oh, good. Ooh, okay. I want to hear. So, next film is yours. You know, so there's the whole thing where, you know, he likes Molly Ringwald and whatever. That doesn't work out there. But he goes to this party and he's, you know, long story short, the guy that Molly Ringwald loves, he has a girlfriend who's gorgeous. She's drunk and passed out at this big party. And he gets to talking to Anthony Michael Hall. And before you know it, he's putting Anthony Michael Hall in a Rolls Royce with a bunch of beer, his passed out girlfriend, and basically was like, here, you can do whatever you want with her.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate basically saying, oh, if a girl's drunk at a party, it's okay to have sex with her. And that's, I think, a film that who knows how influential it was on male behavior to say, hey, if you get a girl drunk and then you have sex with her, there's no really harm or foul.
Right. Well, and that's...
It's terrible. It makes it hard to watch that movie.
It's so disturbing, yeah. I mean, I can imagine my older daughter, who's 11, watching that movie and freaking out about it.
Yeah, and of course, we're not even... Well, I got the segue because it... So to me, that is the very most problematic thing because it turns out that the two of them do have sex. Now, he was supposedly drunk too, and so neither one was, you know... And I guess he finds a way to make it okay because Anthony Michael Hall's character was too drunk to remember it. So I guess it was sort of consensual by two drunk people, but it really isn't okay.
It's really not okay. And I think that's another thing that is a big difference with these movies is the treatment of alcohol. You know, there's a character in Up the Creek who is an alcoholic. And it's played for laughs all the way through. The other one I was thinking about was, well, you had mentioned the High School USA drunk driving thing.
Right, which I think is what started this whole thing for us is that we need to really get in and explore this land of 80s and its appropriateness.
Yeah, and we haven't even touched on, you know, horror movies, which I think, you know, that's a whole, but we've sort of been circling around these comedies. One movie that I loved when it came out in 1983. I saw my sister was obsessed with it. So I think the first time I saw it was her second time. And years later, I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I thought, I'm going to show this to my wife who'd never seen it before. And she was horrified by this movie.
What is it?
Risky Business.
Oh, she was horrified.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because it's a definite male fantasy.
Well, it's a total male fantasy. It glorifies prostitution. Here's the thing. I think the movie is a satire.
I know, and we've discussed that.
And we've discussed that, but she didn't see it as a satire and just was horrified by it and thought it was like the most offensive thing ever.
Well, you know... It was actually pretty much a critical success.
Yes,
but
it was.
Interesting is that in 1983, who were the critics?
Right. a bunch of
white males.
A bunch of white men. Well, we haven't even gotten into how white these movies are.
I know there's so much. So here's the thing. Right now we know that we're going to have to do multi-parts, and we'll have to do some research, figure out what our next part will be, because.
Oh, and we're not done with 16. We haven't even talked about the Asian stereotypes.
Is that's the thing is in 16 Candles, the Asian stereotypes, yeah. Long Duk Dong is probably one of the most offensive characters
since Mickey Rooney.
Since Mickey Rooney, right. and Mickey Rooney only gets a little bit more because he was not Asian.
Right.
Played an Asian. There's that whole, I mean, we could go that route with all of these films. It's just the lack of diversity, the making fun of people of different nationalities.
Yeah.
Certainly, and again, I will start writing them down when I see them, but almost every one of these comedies, I guarantee you, makes fun of somebody because they're gay or makes fun of you, like, you know, some kind of gay slur.
Yes,
is thrown out.
Absolutely. The amount of, yeah, and it's sometimes subtle, but there is homophobia in a lot of these movies, and it was played for laughs.
Well, and just the terminology that was used. I mean, and I don't even want to use these words.
Yeah, let's
now,
not use these words. But
the I call it the F word, and it's
yes.
not the one with the four letters. That is thrown out so frequently
yes.
in a lot of these films. I saw this movie, a late night. It's a late night slasher movie called Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker.
Oh
and
yeah,
I confess, I never, ever, ever heard of this movie when it was out in 1980. And it's like it's this guy who I think directed a lot of TV stuff, this guy William Asher, and it features Jimmy McNichol and an actress named Susan Tyrell.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then this character actor, Bo Svenson, who basically is in like 1,000 movies.
Yes.
And he's been in some Tarantino stuff. No, I mean, really.
Oh, no, he
his
is.
Credits.
Yeah, he works
he's in like
crazy.
20 movies this year, and you will never hear of any of them. It's true.
Oh, I know. Yeah. He's a working actor.
Essentially, it's this very strange movie where Susan Tyrell plays the most unhinged performance of any actor or actress I've ever seen. And she's this insane aunt who is raising this guy, Jim McNichol, and the kid's parents were killed in some weird auto accident years before. And it's very graphically shown. And long story short, it turns out that I think she was originally in love with Jimmy McNichol's father. And I guess that, you know, so she kind of raises this boy. Oh, no. And it turns out that she was actually the mom, but she gave him to the parents to like raise or something. And then they got killed, but she really killed them. She poisoned them or something. And she's got their bodies like up in the attic.
Right.
And anybody that gets in the way of her relationship with this Jimmy McNichol, which I guess is now a little incestuous that she's like in love with him, she will murder. And there's this detective on the case, Bo Svenson. And he somehow, this guy who comes over, he's like the plumber, he refuses her advances. So she kills him. But Jimmy
okay.
McNichol walks in on it. And she's like, okay. He tried to rape me. Okay. Well, the detective doesn't buy the rape story, and he thinks that Jimmy McNichol murdered the plumber guy.
Right, okay.
And it turns out that he does some research, and he finds out that the plumber was gay. And somehow this guy is the ultimate homophobic cop, and he uses the F word, like, really, like 1,000 times
oh,
in this
wow.
thing. And he becomes obsessed with trying to nail Jimmy McNichol for this murder because he's pretty sure it's because he's gay and that this guy was gay. And then he finds out that Jimmy McNichol's basketball coach is gay. And because he's gay, he gets him fired.
Oh,
and
man.
He's,
wow.
It's insane. And basically, it leaves this impression that somehow you are like some unhinged murderer if you're gay.
Well, I mean, there's a huge, oh, man, we're focusing on the 80s right now. But if we want to get into gay and trans LGBTQ villains, there's a huge history of that in Hollywood.
Well, we should that should be a separate episode.
Yeah, that should.
I think we could just I mean, we get all these things about these reckoning episodes. We're having a reckoning.
We're having a reckoning. But yeah, I mean, oh, the 80s.
But this movie just really shocked me because I was like, because you watched it and it wasn't, it was like, this was a story plot and it wasn't just, this was like, wow, this is okay to have this, even if it's a slasher movie and it's low grade. It's just a very weird thing.
It's a very weird. Well, the other movie, when you brought this up about the F word, was that I was thinking of was Adventures in Babysitting.
Well, that's interesting.
There's a scene where one of the kids is calling this other character the F word a lot. I should also point out I'm laughing a lot during this episode, and a lot of that is just because of my discomfort, not because I think this stuff is funny.
Well, you're laughing back is looking at going, wow, this is how this is the movies that we watch.
Yeah, I can't believe
and
you
it's
know,
like, wow.
Yeah, and I mentioned Weird Science. I mean, there's a whole nother thing there. They have this older woman that they claim to be having sex with.
Well, but no, even worse, they create
yes,
a
they
woman
create the
to
woman.
Have sex with.
Yeah. To have sex with, yeah. Imagine the genders were reversed in this movie, and it was two teenage girls conjuring.
That would be awesome. The new weird reboot of Weird Science when these two girls create this like super hot guy to have sex with.
Yeah,
that'd be hilarious.
That would not play.
Yeah, but I want to see that movie.
Okay, well, let's play that with a lot of these movies then. Let's gender reverse Risky Business. How creepy does that get?
Be awesome. Oh, they're so great. Well, you know, in Risky Business, right, they have, well, and it's funny, it's not Blake Flesh, but the person that he first gets called up, right,
is
the
black.
First prostitute is a black male.
Yes.
Dressed as a woman.
Yes.
Transgender, or just, I guess, transvestite, we don't know.
Yeah, but again, that's played like, oh, that's not what white people want, straight white people want.
Well, the character even says, Joel, I know what boys, you know,
yes.
out in the lake want.
Yes, exactly. Which is another thing about these movies is, with the exception of a few characters here and there, a lot of them are about well-off white people.
Oh, yes. The problems of the
yeah.
of the rich white person.
Exactly. Like Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Well, that's what I guess, you know, that's what John Hughes knows.
That's what John Hughes knows. Yeah. And so that's there's just not a lot of representation in these movies. And I keep coming back to Up the Creek, but it's an incredibly white movie, but there's two black characters.
Oh, we actually talked about that. My wife and I were watching it. We were like, let's see. Are there going to be any black actors in this movie? Oh, wait. And will anybody? I think each one gets to say a line.
Yeah, they each get a line or two.
I have a question because we have a list that we're going off of some things just to help us remind. And there's a thing you have on your list.
Yeah.
And I know why it's on your list, but I'm just kind of curious to hear your take on. Which is, it's a spoof comedy,
mm-hmm.
And so it's designed to have a lot of offensive jokes, etc.
Right.
Airplane.
Okay.
What's your problem there?
Okay, it's...
I mean, sure, it's inappropriate, but...
It's largely that it's inappropriate.
Well, it's also because in 1980, somehow, that film, and you watch it, you almost would think that you're watching a rated R movie, and it was not even PG-13 because it didn't
exactly.
exist. It was PG.
And that's why it's on the list, is because it's PG, and it really shouldn't be.
And I had arguments because my parents wouldn't let me see it. I'm like, I've seen an eight. I got to see The Shining this summer. I can't see Airplane? No, you cannot. I'm like, why? Oh, it's hilarious. Great. No,
yeah,
you cannot see it.
I mean,
why? Why can't I see a PG movie?
I don't know if you can get away with like the jive talking black man and the pedophilia jokes in the same way.
Yeah, okay.
But
see, at least they offend everybody. And I get
no,
and
they
I will
do.
Give this film.
It's just I thought I hadn't seen it in a very long time, and I thought, "Oh, my kids might like this." And
my oldest enjoyed it. I don't know if the oldest one was interested in watching.
My oldest 5 minutes into this movie said, "We should not be letting the youngest one watch this."
Ah, she's responsible.
She's responsible. It's because there were like masturbation jokes in the first 5 minutes.
I saw it later, like the next year that summer was at the drive-ins. I saw it with Meatballs, which is another one I didn't get to see at the time. And I loved it. But it's a funny thing. When you're not quite old enough to get every
right.
sexual joke,
yes.
you'll know something is funny, but you don't know why. So you'll laugh anyway, even
exactly.
if you don't get it. Like when there's a horse in the bed, you're laughing because there's a horse in the bed, not because of what it
means. Not because you get what it yeah, how it adds up. So yeah, that's why that was on my list, just because it should not be PG. It's just an example. I think it's the prime example of 80s PG.
So talk about creepy. This is one of the king creepiest things. And it's even creepier that at the time, I don't think I appreciated how creepy it was. When this came out, which is 1981 or two, I wanted to see this film so bad. And I think my parents went to see it only because I wanted to see it so bad. Uh-huh. And they knew that I was too young to see it, so they at least could say they saw it. And it was a movie called Private Lessons.
Oh, yes.
And it really kicked off a lot of these male fantasy sex comedies geared towards, you know, horny teens. And a young, impressionable youth who was maybe like 15.
Yeah.
He has a rich father who has to go away for a while. And of course, he has no mom, right? So he has no mom in his life. She died or something. And they have this chauffeur played by Howard Hessman and this, beautiful housekeeper played by Sylvia Crystal, who was, you know, famous for those soft porn movies, I guess.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who she was at the time I was a kid. And basically, the whole plot is they want to rob the rich guy. So the plan is to seduce the son.
Okay.
And then once she has seduced the son, she pretends that she has a heart attack and dies so that he will feel like he's done something bad and they have to give him money or whatever to make this all go away. But the creepy part is that she is just like Weird Science. She's like, you know, in her 30s.
Yeah.
And it's basically a plot about this 30-something-year-old having sex with a 15-year-old, actually seducing him.
Yeah.
It's basically statutory rape designed as a comedy. And so that's really creepy. But I wanted to see this film. It was one of those things where I plotted, how am I going to see this movie? Right? Because we didn't have cable at the time. We had moved to a different town. I still had some friends from my old town when I was like in third grade. And we kept in touch once in a while. Well, I ended up like talking to him on the phone. And we devised this whole plot that he invited me over for the weekend and I was going to stay over. And he had a den and he had cable in the den, right? And the plan was we were going to watch Halloween 2 on cable.
Right.
And I wanted to see that too. And I was like, oh, great. No one's going to take me to see that. So we watched that. And then we watched this movie called All the Marbles and had like mud wrestling women in it. It was like a rated R comedy.
Right.
But the special coup de grace was we had another friend, and he lived up the street from this other kid. He had Cinemax, which, of course, was known as Skinemax because they showed
They were known for the skin.
And so in the middle of the day, they were going to be showing Private Lessons. So we had this elaborate thing where we're going to go over to this kid Arthur's house and do whatever. And nobody the wiser. And his parents were the parents that just didn't pay attention to what was happening. So we're in his den and we're all keyed up to watch this Private Lessons movie. And the movie starts and we're watching like 10 minutes of it. And then back then, cable wasn't always the most stable product in some towns.
Oh, yeah.
Something happens and his cable goes out. Watching them, this kid jumps up and down. He's freaking out. He's like, no, no, son of a bitch, no. He runs over to his phone and he calls up the cable company and he starts chewing them out like he was some adult. He's going, you get this back on. Why is this off? We thought he was deranged. He went completely unhinged. And then like 10 minutes later, it came back on. So, you know, we missed like 10 minutes, but we got to see all of like, you know, the new, and I walked away very disappointed, realizing I'd been had, that this movie was not good at all. But it had a simulated sex scene. And there was a part of me, as like a 13-year-old or whatever, that obviously was very excited about a kid that was around my age getting a chance to have sex with an older woman.
Right.
Or any woman, I guess.
Any woman. But it seems so wrong now.
Well, I think my wife and I caught it on cable like several years ago. And it's just like, just shaking your head like, tisk, tisk, tisk.
Well, yeah, while we're on the subject, I just want to mention Loverboy.
which I've mentioned before, and I love it, and it's totally inappropriate.
It is totally inappropriate.
It was inappropriate in 1989 when I saw it, and you knew it, and it's like, but I guess as long as you know how inappropriate it is, it's a laugh fest.
Right. I guess that's true, is that maybe there's a little leeway in comedy sometimes that allows for these things.
Well, how about this? There's a tie-in here, inappropriate tie-in. Okay.
Okay.
So Loverboy, right, 1989, and it's got
Patrick Dempsey. Is it
Patrick Dempsey McSteamy or whatever he's called?
I never saw that Grey's Anatomy show.
So later, I think it was later that year, or it was either the fall of 88 or spring of 89. I was at USC at the time, and my roommate and a friend of mine went. There was this film that he made called Some Girls.
Oh, yeah.
And you seen that?
I don't think so.
It's got Jennifer Connelly in it, which I had a huge crush on, back in that day.
Yeah.
When she was in her, Labyrinth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She was my Jennifer Runyon.
I have not seen it. Yeah.
So there's this girl and this guy. They live they're in like Canada or something, and they're college lovers, and they're going home for Christmas break, and she invites him to her parents were like artists or something, and they're invited to their house, and she has like a couple of sisters, an older sister and a younger sister, like definitely under age 18. And he agrees to go. But no sooner does he get there, she breaks up with him.
That's okay.
And so
yeah.
It puts him in a weird spot. And then throughout the rest of the film, the other sisters try, including the younger one, try to seduce him.
Oh, wow.
And it's a weird thing going on in the whole family. And I love that movie, but there's just some, and I remember something a little bit inappropriate about this young, 13-year-old girl trying to seduce him. And I think that the father even kind of saying, wondering, has he had sex with all his daughters yet or something like that?
Wow. Okay.
It's inappropriate.
It's inappropriate.
But that was the 80s, I guess, is what we're learning.
Yeah, and that the 80s, I think also when we haven't gone into horror yet, we will in a future episode, but these movies were, these comedies, these horror films, the drive-in type movies we're talking about were sort of designed to titillate. They knew they were controversial, but I think something that's happened is this teen comedy doesn't exist in the same way it used to. It's sort of like the 80s teen sex comedy turned into Judd Apatow when it...
Well, yes.
When it
they had that movie that came out. I didn't see the... Is it The Bad Boys or whatever? And it's like these teenage kids discovering how sexed up their parents are.
Oh, I have not seen that.
Yeah, my mom just said how she thought it was hilarious. Oh, but that just came out in theater. It was just out. And then, of course, it has an Apatow tie-in. I think it's
right.
written or directed by one of those
Apatow club guys.
The Apatow gang.
But yeah, so they did. I guess the raunchy movie, there was that sausage movie.
Yep. And then I guess it wasn't the Apatow gang, but I thought it was pretty funny, was Blockers.
Yes, I was going to bring up Blockers. But what's interesting about Blockers is that it addresses these issues head on. It is asking those questions as opposed to just presenting some people jumping around with bare breast.
Yep. Oh, no, I actually thought it was a comedy that was smart. And
yeah.
It really, it was heartfelt. And I think it also dealt with what teenagers today go through.
Exactly. Yeah, but
then there was Booksmart, which I didn't see, and I want to see that and see how that is.
Yeah, I didn't see that either. So I guess they still do kind of exist, but they're not a
there was one almost every week of the summer.
There was one almost every week, and they were all filled with white people, with straight white people.
Lots of white. I mean, of course, that's why, it's a very actually important moment. It's an important film. And it was maybe 90 or 90. It was Reginald Hudlin's House Party.
Yes. House Party. Yeah.
And it's because it was a movie for teenagers that didn't feature white people.
Yeah.
It was African-American characters. And it was, funny. And it was that's so important in the history of film that I think people, when they think of historic moments in films,
right,
that they forget these small movies that are huge leaps forward.
Right. And that actually after House Party, it sort of opened up, people realized that there was a market there for those things. And it almost created a new genre in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, like, surprise, if you do a superhero movie with people of color, people might actually still see it? What?
What?
Black Panther? I can't believe it. They'll still come? Marvel, you got something there.
Yeah,
but... You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and the horror movies, too. Again, not very well integrated.
No, and that's, you know, and I have, you know, I look back and I watch these films, and I watch them a little bit of a different lens because I'm very noticed about just how white the entertainment I was provided as a child was. And it's just, you know, I mean, this is just what I was given. Again, there's this debate, right? And the country is split as always. But when we talk about things like, you know, with the people that don't like that things are too politically correct.
Right.
Well, what it really is saying is they don't like that they can't feel comfortable laughing at the expense of others anymore.
Exactly.
Without being called on. And it is uncomfortable when you're making shifts and changes in attitudes and behaviors. Sure, it's uncomfortable. And the older you are, it may be harder to say, well, I spent my whole life with it being one way, and now I have to be somebody else. And it's hard to change.
It's really hard to change. Yeah.
And, it's not impossible.
And to admit that you were wrong, too. You know, I think that's part of what looking back at these movies did for me.
Well, that's why, like, I am not a person. You know, again, I love movies. And my oldest really enjoys films in a way that my youngest, he likes watching films,
right,
but not like my oldest does. And because of that and his maturity when it comes to these movies, we watch a lot. However, you know, if we're in the theater, it's one thing. We'll watch it all the way through and then we can talk about it afterwards. But I find that we pause movies a lot that we're watching, especially if we're watching an older film like the 80s or the 90s, because there are moments that I feel it's an opportunity to talk to your child.
Absolutely.
But I have to explain why, look, we just saw this and it's not, and this is the way it was. And a lot of times he understands, right? But I still think it's important to talk. So if we see, if I'm not going to have him not see a film like Goonies.
Right.
But if we do watch a film like Goonies, when these things get talked, you know, happen that are offensive today, we have to talk about it.
Yeah, and Goonies definitely fits the bill. It has several offensive things.
To you, they're really offensive. I don't find them as offensive in the way that, like, I'm not going to show my kids Goonies.
Oh, no, I would show my kids Goonies, but I would talk to them about, you know, Asian stereotypes and fat shaming.
Yeah, and talking to them about how ridiculous it would be that there would be a big ship in some well-lit cave. That's always been my biggest problem. The kids
lighting.
Actually behave the way kids would behave and say the things they would in the 80s. But, you know, truthfully, we're forgetting, and this we have to go to the 70s, but one of the most offensive, and it was a PG movie, and it really kind of kicked this off. And it was lauded for the way that kids spoke.
Yeah.
But there's one kid that says nothing but really, like, you watch it today and it's shocking because he says the N-word. He says the F-word. And that is the kid in Bad News Bears.
Oh, yeah.
Your jaw will drop at the things that you say that are said in that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that probably since the 80s.
It's a great film, but you watch it now, and this happened to me. I caught a screening of it several years ago. There was a 35mm print at a place where I went and saw it. And when you hear these things coming out of a kid's mouth,
it
was really shocking because we've come a long way.
We've come a long way.
Never say that in a movie today.
Yeah, some of that language is just no longer appropriate, and with good reason.
Well, you know, even since the last few years with the advent of the Me Too movement, I rewatched recently Superbad.
Oh.
And there are some things in that film that I think they would be changed today.
Well, I have a take on that movie. Yeah, I think you're right.
You do?
Yeah.
This could already, this may end up just being a two-parter episode. We're going to have to split up just because there's so much good stuff going on. What's this take?
My take is that
I just saw it again.
Okay, I haven't seen it in a decade, but my take is that the movie is anti-drinking.
It makes the point that the kids actually make the right decisions
exactly
when it comes to whether or not, like, there's an opportunity.
There's an opportunity to take advantage of a woman, and they don't do it because they realize it's wrong because she's drunk.
Yes,
and they realize that alcohol is not the way to get women. And
But they talk about it at the beginning in a way that they're looking to try to get.
They think about it in that way, but the course of the film is them learning that that's wrong.
Right. It's a lesson film. Thank you, Apatow.
Yeah. So, no, it is a lesson film. And because I don't think they could have gotten away with it without that ending, without it being that they get the girls without alcohol.
Yeah, because we know how John Hughes would have played it.
Yes. Exactly. We know exactly how John Hughes would have played it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's almost like, you know, it's very similar in a lot of ways to 16 Candles, but it's sort of like it kind of fixing some of the problems with 16 Candles.
Yeah, no, some of these things just like the terrorist in Back to the Future.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's not going to,
that's a stereotype.
No,
sure.
You can only get away with that if you're like making a Peter Berg movie.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, right? In the 80s and 90s, occasionally you get like a Middle Eastern terrorist. And it was sort of like, haha, funny. Well, you know, it's not so funny anymore,
it's
right?
It's not so funny anymore.
They don't usually play that for laughs anymore.
Yeah, it's, it just doesn't fly.
Comedy's tricky. I mean, maybe that's another reason why comedy films, you don't see many of them and they're not big hits anymore, because right now we're in a period where I think a lot of writers and directors, people are trying to figure out, how can we be funny in a movie these days?
Right. How do you navigate this?
Yeah. Is everything. And I think that's going to be just it's a transition of like finding like what's funny and stuff, and what's okay to make fun of, where people feel like you're just not making fun of a person because of their race or their sexuality. It's tricky. I don't know. You know?
Yeah. It is tricky.
That's why we fall back on the 80s comedies and just, we laugh. We see them at the drive-ins where we feel safe. We go to the Mahoning drive-in and see the teens gone wild.
See the teens gone wild. See the slasher movies. These movies, they're just such simple pleasures in a way.
Yeah. And you know, look at, I we've talked about, this is the reckoning, right? So like Revenge of the Nerds, I have some problems there, but I still love it. I still love the movie.
I have not seen it in so long that I can't say, but I will say I don't love Up the Creek.
Up the Creek's not funny. I mean, that's the thing, is Revenge of the Nerds is funny. Up the Creek's not funny.
But, you know, I still, and my admission here is I like The Breakfast Club.
Well, so The Breakfast Club, you know, we were both the perfect age.
Yeah.
I have to say that I was into films, I read reviews, and I remember, like, critics hated this movie for the most part. And I went and saw it opening day. And, of course, I wasn't old enough, but we went to the theater that you could, and it was me and three other friends of mine.
Yeah.
We all had it was all day off that day at school. So it was like maybe it was vacation week, President's Day vacation week. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was, but I know we had it off. It was like a Wednesday it came out, and this theater was completely packed, and it was all teenagers.
We've
all seen it. And I remember by the end, that movie I thought was like, that should be nominated for Best Picture.
That's
like,
how I felt too,
a lot to me. It spoke to me, and that's why it got the reputation, because it seemed like he knew how to speak to kids in a way that other films weren't saying. There was all those sex teen comedies, but this one really made me feel.
Yeah, this took it to a different place.
Well, I recognized the jock, that was like something that I could see.
Yeah, no,
and
all the
I recognized Molly Ringwald's character was so real. It was that popular girl, and I recognized myself as the Anthony Hall character, and then the Ally Sheedy character. It was like the first time I'd seen a character like that on screen, because I knew there were girls that I'd see sitting in my class that were
the
like
the basket her. Case. Yeah.
Yeah, which was a terrible way to refer to her.
It's a terrible, well, yes.
Like, it didn't make sense. I was like, why is she a basket case? I thought she was the most normal of them all.
She is the most normal, but I guess she is depressed or something. I mean, we haven't even gotten into how these movies treat mental health.
There's so many. Listen, if you're listening to the show and you've heard me and you've got thoughts on this, you know, help us out. Get some things in there. And, you know, if you'd like to be a guest on our program, write us about that.
Yeah. Because
I think what we're, you know, we're getting ready. There's a couple things as we end this program. I'm going to end it.
Okay.
Because we have to, and we could talk about this forever. It's obviously a subject that we have a lot to say. But we have, there's a little anniversary I just want to mention. This actually happened a week ago. And, you know, just we weren't taping when this happened, but the two of us have now known each other for 30 years.
That's disturbing.
It's disturbing, yes, but it's the truth. Yep. We have been friends for 30 years. I think that's pretty amazing because, there's a lot of people that come and go and you know, a lot of people are friends with people because of things like Facebook and stuff.
Right.
But
we've actually kept in touch pretty much that entire time. A few years here and there where there was less communication because babies were born.
Yeah, you know, that we were very good where even if it was only like one day in the year, we managed a streak.
Yeah.
For like most of the time we've known each other where we saw each other at least once
exactly.
every year.
Yeah, we did
that.
And then
when we went off and had families, that's where it got a little fragmented for a few years there.
But now the kids are old enough that we can actually...
Now we all get together like once or twice a year. And of course, now I've spent a lot of time in the past year, which we are coming close to the year anniversary of doing this program.
Yes.
And one of the things we want to do in the next year is we'd like to get some more guests going on the show. And we're going to make pains to get that to
So if you have happen. Some kind of weird film obsession or interest that you want to talk about, let us know. And
You don't have to know us for it to be on the show.
Right.
We'll talk to people we don't know. So, you know, John Ford there, if you don't get that review in, but you want to talk
to come on the show, come on the show. Yeah, we can... We can educate you about the 80s.
Yes. And so, you know, now you know, maybe you're intrigued. Maybe you're like, haven't seen a lot of these movies and certainly at your own risk.
Yeah, but it's an interesting little era to delve into. It's sort of like you mentioned this last week, but pre-code movies is, you know, like an interesting era to look at. There's really a decade there of pre-code movies.
Yeah. And, you know, and then there's really like maybe a decade and a half of the introduction of the rating system.
Yes.
You know, so really from the late 60s to the early, you know, till PG-13 came around.
Yeah.
Hollywood was exploring a freedom that they hadn't had in years.
Well, exactly. Yeah. After the monopolies were broken up in the 60s. There was the vertical integration of the studios and the theaters. After that was broken up, there was this big period of sort of this explosion of them trying all these different things.
And, you know, so that's why the 70s, and I think we will dive into that 70s some point in the near future. But that's to me why people always regard that as one of the great decades of film. Well, it's because it's the first full decade where you had studios changing how they were making movies. You had these young filmmakers that had come out of film school for the first time.
Yeah.
But they also came out with the freedom to do content that was never allowed before.
Exactly. Yeah, they had to compete in a different way entirely.
And I think that's why when we talk about, well, geez, why was it that dramas were really popular in the 70s and people would actually go, you know, pack the theater to see something like a Network or a Chinatown?
Or Kramer versus Kramer,
Because they didn't get, these were stories being told in a way that they never could see before. So sure, it was fascinating.
Yeah, and you certainly couldn't see those stories on television.
No, because if it was on TV, it was edited.
Yeah.
And most people did not have cable. I mean, HBO came out in the early 70s, but I didn't even hear about HBO until like maybe 79.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, HBO was late on the scene for me, and we never had it. We just had a VCR.
Right. Because you didn't watch TV. Which is the joke that's not a joke. You didn't.
I didn't.
And I knew that from an early age because when we first met, that was one of the fascinating things about you was that I would reference a TV show and you'd look at me and you really looked at me like, I don't know what the hell you're talking
no
about.
No idea. Yep. I really did. I just didn't watch TV.
No.
But
I did
beg my parents to take me to see some of these 80s movies, though.
And you're the better for it.
And I'm the better for having seen Footloose. Yeah.
I actually saw Footloose in the theater right before it left the mainstream theaters because I felt left out. I'd hear kids, all the popular kids were talking about it. And normally I'm like, popular kids are talking about a genre that's my thing, films. I know films, but I didn't see that one. So I kind of want to see what's going on. And I went and watched it. And I had to admit at the time, I'm like, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I liked it at the time. I haven't really desired to see it in years.
I haven't seen it since, but I really liked it at the time. Yeah.
I mean, it's a silly premise, right?
It's a totally silly premise. But also, it's essentially a dance movie, right? Like,
yeah.
So
it's a way to, you get to cut loose, foot loose. You get to put on the Sunday shoes.
Oh, man.
Oh, good times, people. Good times.
Isn't Michael Madsen in it?
It's Chris Penn's brother.
Yeah, it's Chris Penn. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it was one of his early roles.
That's right.
And then another, the 80s have these actresses that like...
Laurie Singer.
They stood out for me. Yeah, whatever happened to Laurie Singer, man?
Last time, she was around in the 90s for a while.
Last time I really remember her in a movie was in Shortcuts.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
That's weird. I always liked her, but
yeah, I always liked her too. Yeah. I don't know. She did some TV. I think she's probably still working.
I mean, but then there's some that just like, you know, there's a whole 80s thing we could do of like actresses that, you know, I liked and then they retired from acting.
Right.
Like, you know, the girl from the Goonies that I liked.
Well, I was actually looking up Jennifer Runyon.
Yes.
Of course, I was looking up Jennifer Runyon, and it's on her IMDb. She has a gap from 93 to 2015.
Well, you know what? She retires, raises a family, I think.
Yes.
But then there are people like myself. If I could make movies, I'd probably be like Tarantino, but these are like the actors and actresses that I would want in my movies. Like people that I remembered, you know, like I would, my dream would be to bring Phoebe Cates out of retirement.
And that's exactly what
Bridget
happens
Fonda
with somebody
out of
like,
retirement.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens with somebody like Jennifer Runyon. And so she's in, you know, like Silent Night, Bloody Night 2.
Yeah, well, okay. So, you know, no points for taste there, but
No. But clearly there's some people making some horror films.
I know, and she's probably thrilled. She's like, oh, that'd be fun. It'd be fun to go in and be a film and appreciate it and realize. I mean, I think that's the thing is, even at this Mahoning Drive-In, as we're going to close with that, is that they are sometimes getting people that were in these movies to show up.
Exactly, yeah.
And I just think that is wonderful. To me, that's a wonderful movie story. I really hope that they're able to keep this going for years to come. And I really hope that next season that I can plan a trip with the family to go down and see something.
I told my family about this movie at the drive-in last night at dinner, and they all said, we want to go on a road trip.
Well, I think what we should do, we'll have to, you know,
it's going to take some scheduling, but we can figure it out.
Yeah, but we should all be there
to
do that.
We should all be there. We should rent an RV.
Yes, we got to turn it. You know what? We're going to turn it into an 80s adventure. Yeah. Well, what we'll do is we're going to do it really offensive. Like we'll have the boys versus the girls.
Right.
And we'll each have our RV and we'll have shenanigans throughout our road trip. Who can get there first. And we'll like, you know, we'll sabotage. How many rafts were blown up in that Up the Creek movie?
I know. I love that. We were like,
keep getting these rafts. There was one time, because I really wasn't paying full attention to it, we were watching for 2 minutes, and we see, like, the raft explode, and then I was looking on my phone, and 2 minutes later, they were on a raft going back down the river, and we actually had to rewind it, because neither one of us could figure out how they got a new raft, and then we still couldn't figure it out. And that's why we were just so. That's what makes that, I think, that movie fun, because it's so stupid.
It's
and
really
not funny.
Dumb, but
you have to add your own comedy.
It's not that funny. There's something sort of charming about it. I do love that they destroy a house at the end by having a river go through it.
That was awesome.
That was pretty awesome. And it reminded me of the house in 1941. That goes off the...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I just love stuff like that where you can tell it's real.
But how about this? The whole premise of it is that they have the Fart Master College, and John Hillerman comes in, and he basically says, if you can win something for our college, I'll graduate you and all this stuff.
Right.
Well, the movie ends on one of these classic freeze frames of the dog in the 80s freeze frame. But John Hillerman's never there at the end.
He never comes in to give them their degrees. Yeah.
They get nothing. Right. It's just, I was like, what happens? Okay. But listen, we've been talking forever. And I'm going to just tell you, if you're listening to this part, you're probably listening to part two, because I probably think there's just too much fun stuff to cut it. And so I'm going to have to just make this two episodes. Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't know. I might get back and go, oh, this is too offensive, and I'm going to offend somebody, so I'm going to cut some of this stuff out.
This might be the first two of many 80s episodes.
Yeah. I mean, again, I didn't realize how much fun this was going to be.
Well, you know.
To me, anyway. And that's why we do the program for you, the listener, but really for you and me.
It's really for us, and we're bonding over this time when we were teenagers.
Yes. I mean, you know, to let the cat out of the bag, you know, how this all evolved is that, you know, nowadays, very rarely will I talk to anybody on the phone, like a phone call. And so everything's like a text, and you get like a brief message here and there. And it's just, that's just kind of how things have evolved. But you don't get to have like conversations about your favorite subjects if you don't live near somebody. And the two of us don't live near each other and haven't lived near each other in decades.
Yeah.
So it's just fun to talk about these things, because there was a time where we, before the internet really took off, we would get on the phone and we would talk about movies.
Yes, and now we allow you to listen to our conversation, or we welcome you.
And you can tune out or tune in, and you know, it doesn't matter to us, but well, it does.
It does. We enjoy having you listen.
All right. Well, anybody out there hearing this program, hope you enjoyed it, and go see some stuff and tell us about it so that we can, you know, talk about it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.
Signing off there, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.